All right. Unfortunately, after the morning's excitement, we don't have a quorum this morning, so we'll be doing everything informational basis only this morning. We will not be taking action until and if a quorum is present. So we'll start with House File 2427. And let me see here. This is a Cleavorn bill.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I was actually supposed to be up first today because I have a conflict.
Okay. I have a chair.
Sure.
Everyone has a conflict today. I guess I must have missed that note, Representative Richardson. I apologize. I guess Representative Cleavorn isn't here, so if you have to go.
Yeah.
Representative Cleavorn first to the agenda because she had to go chair state government finance. She has decided not to come, so if the chair would like to have
Representative Richardson, this is for House File 3066.
Yes.
All right, we'll go ahead and do that then. We'll call a little audible. Sorry about that.
I'm scared to Secretary. Close this. I'm afraid I'll lose it.
Yeah. Rep. Richardson, whenever you're ready, go ahead and start your testimony on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3066 is a one-time appropriation to the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, known as MEDA, to provide assistance to minority-owned business enterprises. The bill would appropriate $15 million from the general fund in fiscal year 2024 for statewide business development and assistance services, $10 million for a revolving loan fund, and $5 million for operating support related to business development and assistance services. We have heard the costs of inequality as it relates to discrimination and lending practices that persist. It hampers job generation, increases wage disparities, and contributes to losses to our state economy as well. MEDA has a long history and is well suited for impact as they have served more than 25,000 businesses since inception. And today I have to testify with me the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Economic Development Association.
All right, thank you. Welcome to Ms. Bridges. Whenever you're ready, go ahead and start with your testimony. And please start by identifying yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to speak about MEDA's work. I'm Dorothy Bridges, CEO President of MEDA, and am here to really talk about just the impact that we've made, however, on an incremental level. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for your support and demonstrating it by authoring our bill for funding. MEDA was founded in 1971. Its mission is to provide support for BIPOC businesses and BIPOC entrepreneurs to help them succeed. We do this by providing capital, consulting, and contract networking or matchmaking services. We operate across the state of Minnesota with 50% of our work in Minneapolis, 35% in St. Paul, and 15% in Greater Minnesota. I recognize that many of the committee members represent suburbs and exurbs, and I want to just let you know that 68%, while 68% of our work is done in the core Twin Cities, we have roughly 25% in the suburbs and exurbs, and about 5% in Greater Minnesota. MEDA is scaling its services in order to quadruple the number of clients that we are able to serve statewide. To do this, we're raising $35 million in grant support over the next 3 years. We are requesting from the state $15 million in order to scale our work. This will allow MEDA to serve 1,800 BIPOC entrepreneurs across the state. It would allow us to deploy $125 million in state and bank capital to these businesses and these entrepreneurs. It will allow us to secure the much-needed contracts for 100 of our entrepreneurs from corporate and governmental units. MEDA is deploying more than $440 million in capital over the next 3 years to our BIPOC entrepreneurs with the help of our partners and key stakeholders. Our request for $15 million over the next 3 years is to provide $10 million in grant support for lending, These grant dollars will unlock $20 million in capital from banks so that financing created by this grant will be leveraged 2-to-1. So $30 million in that aspect of it. We also are requesting an additional $5 million to provide for the consulting services and the technical assistance that we offer to our clients. MEDA is scaling these services because we think it's absolutely necessary. What we've learned over the last 52 years from our clients is that it's not just about the capital or the lending. It's about wrapping around the consulting services and the ability to network with key corporations across the country, as a matter of fact, for contract services. Because we know that when BIPOC businesses succeed, it helps to bridge that economic disparity gap. What we have learned over the years and then on our research is while a couple of years ago we identified that gap to be at a cost of about $694 million, it's now upwards of $1 billion. And this is in the state of Minnesota alone. So just imagine how it happens when you go countrywide. And MEDA is positioned, very well positioned, with its model to scale up and to leverage the capital stacks of our key partners. We are in a position to really leverage and scale up our businesses so that they can build that generational wealth that we're all talking about. Our BIPOC businesses are doing a wonderful job of hiring other BIPOC representation from our communities, and we would love to have the state join us on this journey.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much. We'll go to member discussion in a moment. Want to make sure any members of the public want to testify on this bill? All right, any discussion from members? All right, I didn't say at the beginning, this is, if we had a quorum, we were the intention was to make this laid over for possible inclusion again today. We're just being informed on this bill. Rep. Richardson, would you like to close us out on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present on the bill. And I'd also like to thank Ms. Bridges as well for her testimony and also for the impactful work that MEDA continues to do within our communities.
Thank you so much. All right, we're moving around a little bit on the agenda today, so we'll go back to the first House file we were going to hear, which is House File 2427. Again, we still do not have a quorum, so we're going to continue with informational hearings. Rep. Cleavorn is not here, so I was actually the one who was going to present this bill, but since we are just hearing it informally, informationally as well. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to our testifier.
Yeah. You want me to do it?
No, we're good.
All right. My handy tech assistant has to help show me how to get my slides set up correctly. But good morning, representatives. I'm very happy to be here today. And I'm thrilled to be following Representative Richardson's bill, because you will find that this shares many kind of objectives and similarities with that. Would you like me to keep going?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay.
I'm just here.
So before I go on with the presentation, I first want to explain to you, for those of you that don't know, what the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board is. The CAP Board is a small agency, and we have a breadth of duties. Under statute, the CAP Board has jurisdiction over planning and land uses in the 60-block capital area, shown within the yellow boundary on this map. Blue shaded areas are state properties. And when I say land use and planning, that means that we also have zoning authority within our area instead of the City of St. Paul. The board has 12 members with appointees from the governor's office, the Senate, the House, and the City of St. Paul. Thank you. I am speaking to you on this item because it touches all aspects of CAP board work. The CAP board oversees, as I said, planning, land use, design of public and private buildings and spaces in our 60-block area. The legislature generally is probably most familiar with our work on the campus. We share oversight of any changes to this Capitol building with the Minnesota Historical Society and played a large role in its restoration. And we oversee open space planning, design, and memorials for the Capitol Mall and campus, which is expertly implemented by the Department of Administration. But just as importantly, we oversee planning around the campus and work closely with our community partners. This state investment that's being introduced couldn't come at a better time. There are many important needs and activities happening along Rice Street and other Capitol area corridors. Rice Street today isn't a place that people want to walk. It's scary to cross, and there is no Main Street character that attracts people to stroll and shop at area businesses. The Sears site is currently for sale, and when future site users consider the quality and the feel of the area today, Rice Street and Marion are a negative, not a positive. Improvement to the public rights of way, even just to sidewalks or bicycle infrastructure, will improve the site's development potential. This investment would help implement a vision for Lower Rice Street and the Capitol Rice community that was developed in partnership with the community, the county, the city, and the CAP board between 2017 and 2019. There were many, many public meetings, workshops to talk about things like commercial vitality, safety, parking, street design, and how all of these relate to community health and economic development. The strategy for fund investments are going to be determined by a time-limited task force. The task force will work with economic development and transportation consultants and professionals like MEDA, and talk to community members, community development organizations, and research successful examples from places similar to the Capitol area. So when you think about the area around the Capitol, we are much more akin to like a college campus and a surrounding neighborhood where often sort of a town-gown relationship can develop. And the city has made some small investments to Rice Street to help businesses, but the magnitude of investments that's needed to really help grow community wealth and make this a great place needs state partnership. Two recent bill amendments propose significant activities that are going to help us implement our comp plan. The first is the Capitol Area Community Vitality Fund, which is intended to improve livability, economic health, and the safety of communities in the Capitol area. The link between investments and transportation infrastructure and economic development is widely recognized. There would be $5 million for community development investments and $5 million for transportation investments based on recommendations from the Capitol Area Community Vitality Task Force. And I want to emphasize that this task force is a really important part of figuring out how to most effectively invest in the Capitol Area community so that we're working on with the community and that they are largely helping us understand how that can be most meaningful to make a great community for the Capitol and everybody who visits here, but also for them. With that, I conclude. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. As we now have a quorum, the chair moves that House File 2427 be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Smith, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, could I also, there is a amendment, the A5 amendment. Can we move that?
Yes. Do you, can you tell us a little bit about the A5?
Yeah, so that's, thank you, Madam Chair. Just the last slide there focused on that $5 million for transportation investment. That is what the A5 amendment is moving, and that's what this committee specifically is looking at, as well as the overall development of the area.
Representative Smith moves the A5 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, it's so moved. All those in favor of adopting the A5, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Yes. Anything else? Any other discussion, members? Lee Posnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Executive Secretary, thanks for presenting the bill again. I was able to hear it earlier this week. It feels like 2 weeks ago, but
here.
Could you just share with this committee is for economic development how it was decided what type of development would be in that Ford building? And then the other question, how is the board going to address safety concerns on the Capitol complex in general, but more specifically on those areas that seem to have a little more problem?
Yes, thank you. Those are kind of two, so I'll start with the Ford building. So the Ford building, as probably a number of you know, is owned by the Department of Administration. It's been vacant for some time. They do not think that they have the ability under bonding rules and whatnot that they have to be able to renovate the building and reposition it for offices that would be affordable for lease rates for state agencies. So they have submitted a bill that's up this session seeking demolition money for the building. The CAP board had hoped that there might be an opportunity to reuse it as part of redevelopment, but it doesn't look like that is going to happen. But still, the state owns the lot next to it. It's thinking about doing, you know, a larger new state building on that entire corner, including the former Ford building site, in coming years. And we think it's really important for the vitality and economic health of the neighborhood and the experience of people at the Capitol to have more locally owned businesses that provides services like coffee shops and food and whatnot that a lot of people from the community and here would really enjoy. And that is such an important corner that we think that it's important that a commercial use be allowed as part of that building. And it would really enliven and put eyes on the street at a very important intersection. So that's part of the bill, is to create that opportunity for mixed use as part of a state building, which can be very challenging, and it's something we are going to be working hard on.
Madam Chair, if I could, yeah. I asked two questions, but why don't we maybe, I should just ask one at a time. But can you share with the committee what kind of economic study or research was done for the viability of some commercial stuff? I think it sounds great, personally. We could use that, but I also kind of wonder if it's viable, especially when we're not in session all the time. You know, in the summer months, it gets pretty quiet up there. So for a business to come in there and try to pay rent, and was there some kind of economic?
Yeah, so
Ms. Glatt-Smith.
Sorry. during the years of 2017 to 2019, as I said, there were a lot of meetings. They included economic development partners from the city of St. Paul and the county, the CAP board, and community members to really talk about the commercial potential of Rice Street in particular there. And I think it was felt that potential is there and that it's an important history of the community that we really have to work to have it continue to be part of the fabric of this whole community. But it's an area that's seen some disinvestment. Then there was COVID. You know, a lot of businesses are struggling. But it's not an area that is only going to be frequent and supported by visitors to the Capitol. That certainly helps. But, you know, we're surrounded by a big community. There are lots and lots of people around here, so I think it's important when you do economic development that you're making sure you're making investments in things that aren't just dependent on one group or one niche, and that's why doing some time with the task force and talking to specialists before decisions are made about specifically where to spend the money is so important.
Lee Posnick.
Thank you. I That's a pretty good explanation. Will be interesting to see if that plans out, and then if the businesses are viable. It's an exciting opportunity, and I think coffee shop or some kind of little restaurant or something that people can get to quick and easy from a capital perspective, but perhaps from the neighborhood too. So it'll be interesting to watch that go. But then if you could just address some of the safety concerns that the board looks at on that, and it is relative to the kind of the economic development that you're talking about on the Ford building too. So, and then we can move on.
I'm Ms. Mayor Klatt-Smith, before I let you respond, I just want to remind members that we are in the Economic Development Committee, and so we should ensure that we're keeping the discussion to the bill that is in front of us. Ms. Mayor Klatt-Smith.
Yeah.
I think economic development, doing it well, safety is one of the things that gets addressed with it. I mean, when you have a healthy place and people want to be there because it feels good, there are things to do, just having more people around always helps with just eyes on the street, sense of safety. You know, a lot of areas have been hit hard by people struggling with mental illness during COVID, things going on, and I understand that it's getting a little bit better recently in the Capital area, but having a healthy community usually is what addresses safety. It's not police calls or things like that.
Lead Cosmic.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any other questions.
Seeing no other member discussion, the chair renews the. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Smith, operating on a little sleep. So, any last words?
We all are. I don't have much to add except this is an exciting prospect, and I'm here for Rep. Cleavorne as well, so I'm not as much an expert, but in reviewing to prepare for today, it looks like a wonderful program and happy that this is moving forward.
Thank you. The chair renews the motion that House File 2427 as amended be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to use this to transition out of this chair.
Vice Chair Hanson.
Thank you, committee members, and good morning. I know we're all operating on a little sleep, so hopefully we will stay sharp. Welcome to the committee, Representative Vang. Since you're not a member of the committee, I'll move that House File 2870 be moved before us. And Representative Vang, if you'd like to proceed and explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill appropriates one-time funding of $12 million to Fortis Capital to provide revolving loans to underserved communities for commercial development. A testifier here today will talk about Fortis and their work and how this is a great investment to support future entrepreneurs within underserved communities. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll yield my time to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Vang. And if the testifier could make their way to the table, please. When you arrive and get settled, please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you would like, your organization's affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Terrell. I'm the President and Chief Operating Officer and one of the founding members of Fortis Capital. I'm testifying, as was mentioned by Representative Vang, in support of House File 2870. The bill, as she mentioned, will authorize a one-time $12 million appropriation to Fortis Capital in furtherance of its economic development activities. Fortis Capital is a Minnesota 501c3 nonprofit community development corporation engaged in economic development finance in the state of Minnesota. It has an emphasis on providing access to debt capital for businesses owned by persons of color and in challenged communities. In the brochure that members have that was passed out in advance of the meeting, You'll see that since late 2020, Fortis Capital has had the privilege of assisting 8 businesses purchase commercial real estate and or expand their businesses. Little information on the businesses are mentioned on the brochure. I'd like to share just a few brief statistics about Fortis Capital. We've invested over $1.5 million in loans to businesses. That $1.5 million has leveraged approximately $10.5 million in public and private sector funding. We've aided in the creation of over 100 new jobs. We've aided in the retention of over 90 existing jobs. We've developed unique partnerships, lending partnerships with several commercial banks and with other community lenders like MEDA and other organizations of that nature. And we've assisted several other businesses to better understand the real meaning of the phrase access to capital. That's on our brochure. We're very proud of it because we understand that capital is financial capital, social capital, and knowledge capital. And we are assisting the businesses that we work with to have a fuller understanding of all 3 phases of access to capital and how it can benefit them. With your support of House File 2870, Fortis Capital will be able to expand its support of small disadvantaged businesses, both in terms of the level of support and the geographic areas that we can serve. Presently, the sources of funding that we have, $2.5 million, which was our initial funding, is restricted to the city of Minneapolis. And so all 8 of the businesses that we've supported are in Minneapolis. With state funding, if this is approved and moves forward, we would be able to assist businesses statewide. You should be aware, although I cannot publicly disclose who, we're proud to make known that recently Fortis Capital was approved for a $1 million program-related investment, PRI, by a major local funder, and there will be press releases on that hopefully within the next 2 weeks. That will be regionally deployed. This particular investor has locations throughout the Twin Cities metro region. And so both with that funding and with the state funding, if approved, we'll be able to greatly expand the geographic area that we can serve. So I respectfully request your support of House File 2870 and the many small businesses that will be assisted if this is approved. We thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Members, any questions, any discussion? Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the bill author and the testifier for being here today. I guess I'm just asking to get a little bit more understanding and maybe tell your kind of vision. You know, the bill language talks a lot about serving underserved communities and entrepreneurs from disadvantaged groups statewide. You were kind of mentioning that at the end of your testimony, but I'd love to hear the vision for your organization as we get outside of Minneapolis into greater Minnesota, because I know in my district alone, along with many districts across our state, this bill would fit a lot of that. So I'd like to hear the vision for your organization.
Thank you, Representative. The vision is really quite simple. We buy risk from partner lenders, and so we could implement our funding program with greater Minnesota lenders in a matter of days. So a perfect example would be anywhere in greater Minnesota, a small business wants to buy $500,000 commercial building. Bank would lend $800,000, but the collateral is only worth $200,000, and so there's a shortfall. Fortis Capital would buy a $200,000 participation in that bank loan so that they would be able to make the full $800,000 and enable the deal to happen when it wouldn't happen but for Fortis's purchase of the risk. And so the model is simple. The lender agreement that we have with partner lenders is a page and a half. The certificates of participation, which codify each deal, are 2 or 3 pages. Bankers understand that, and so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have a tried, true program that we can implement anywhere in the state within a matter of days.
Thank you for that. Any follow-ups, Representative Igo?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just following with that, how do you plan on reaching greater Minnesota communities and businesses with your programs?
Mr. Terrell,
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I have personally a number of contacts throughout greater Minnesota. I serve as the chair of the Amplio Economic Development Corporation, which is a 504 lender. And so with those connections, we have connections throughout the state made possible because of Amplio. Also, in my work with the Groundbreak Coalition that Ms. Bridges is also very much involved in, one of the co-chairs of the commercial aspect of Groundbreak, and that's being led by the McKnight Foundation, we have a great number of contacts throughout the state, and so we would simply market to those contacts, market the program, market the ability to make deals happen by buying risk, and it's just a slow process, but this funding, while primarily for lending, does have a small amount for operating capital, and that would allow us to design more marketing materials to do outreach to those potential lenders in outstate Minnesota.
Thank you. Any follow-ups, Representative Igo?
No, thank you to the testifier for those answers, and I'll just add, I appreciate in the bill, Section B, we're going to be getting reports based on how you guys do it. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative yep. Kosnick?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate your testimony and hearing the program. I know your Fortis is started in 2019. I can tell you've got a much broader history in this type of lending than that, so I'm confident in that part. I don't know the $12 million amount. My question was going to be, you know, for Fortis, how much have you, well, I think you said you leveraged up, you took $1.5 million and leveraged it up to 10.5.
That's correct.
Mr. Terrell.
Yep. The original $1.5 million, that was from other grants or private funds to start it up, the city of Minneapolis, or can you brief me on that so that we can feel comfortable as a state with the $12 million ask?
Mr. Terrell.
Thank you, Representative. The initial funding for Fortis Capital was actually $2.5 million, all of which was required to be used for lending, none for operating expenses. $2 million of it came from Living Cities based in New York and a matching grant or matching forgivable loan of $500,000 from the city of Minneapolis. That arrangement is the reason why that first $2.5 million is restricted geographically to the city of Minneapolis. The $2 million was attracted by the $500,000 of city money, and while city leaders might be somewhat progressive, they aren't going to let us make loans with their money outside of the city of Minneapolis. And in full disclosure, if I may, Madam Chair, until this time next week, I'm also a full-time employee of the city of Minneapolis. I manage and created the Commercial Property Development Fund, a really innovative program that does forgivable loans to enable businesses to purchase real estate. I'm retiring from the city to move to Fortis full-time, and I'm looking forward to that. So it's a week from today. But the $2.5 million that Fortis started with came from Living Cities out of New York and from the city of Minneapolis.
Any follow-up, Representative Kosnick?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My other question was, and I appreciate that answer. It was very helpful. Looks like you got a lot of stuff going on, and it will be exciting to see how this progresses. With or without this funds. Is it common on line 1.12 up to 10% may be used for operating costs? So that's 1.2 million, I believe. Is that common or uncommon? A lot of times in the legislature when we do grants, we're seeing more common a 5% for administration. So if you could comment on that, because I used to be in mortgage lending, and we ran on lots smaller margins of that, especially when you start getting on the bigger dollars. So that I would like some comments on that, because it's a little bit of a concern.
Mr. Terrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I appreciate that question, and I think we've tried to be somewhat conservative in the ask. I've looked at some of the other bills that are pending before this committee and before the legislature this year, and some of them are as much as a third of the entire request for operating expenses. Living Cities, which did not provide any in this first round of funding, is looking at 20% in a future round of funding because they recognize that operating expenses are necessary. But in the case of Fortis Capital, the CEO, Brian Smith, and myself have done everything we've done since August of 2019 with absolutely no operating capital and volunteering our time, because we're both employed full-time elsewhere. And so this is, in essence, startup operating capital for all intents and purposes, even though we have reached a small level of profitability with the interest earnings on the loans that we've made, the 1.5 million of loans that we've deployed.
Representative Kosnick, any follow-up?
I appreciate the explanation, Madam Chair. And Mr. Terrell, correct?
Terrell. Thank you, sir.
I wish you the best. I think we might want to look at that 10% and see if that's appropriate for this type of lending, would be my suggestion to the committee.
And Madam Chair, I can be amenable to that as well. Thank you, Representative Vang. I appreciate that. Representative Kosnick?
Otherwise, it looks like you're on your way to do some good work and some good economic development. And hopefully, as Representative Igo had mentioned, we have some success across the state. But I appreciate bringing the bill forward. Thank you.
Any other committee discussion? Seeing none, I'll turn it over to you, Representative Vang, for closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think I have any more to add. Mr. Terrell did a great testimony here, so I'll just keep it short. I know everybody's running on very low sleep, and I also have another bill hearing to attend to. So thank you very much for the opportunity to present and for your support.
Thank you, Representative Bang. Thank you, Mr. Terrell, for being here. And with that, House File 2870 is laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Next up, we have House File 2826 from Representative Grossel. Make your way to the table. Welcome to the committee, Representative Grossel, and good morning. If you'd like to go ahead and tell us a little bit, House File 2826, being that you're not on the committee, I am going to move that this House File 2826 be before our committee today. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Good morning. There's a very short sleep for, I'm sure, all of us. So brevity is our friend, so I'll get moving on this and get this out of the way and let these gentlemen over here take over the rest of it. This is for a forgivable loan program for remote recreational businesses modified. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate you hearing my bill, House File 2826. I'll be brief and let the testifiers explain the bill. For extension of some time and to mirror Senate language, I have the A1 amendment.
Representative Grossel, would you like to move the A1 amendment for you, or does that sound good? Is that now a good time for you?
That works for me, Madam Chair.
Great, and I will move that the A1 amendment. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your amendment?
The A1 amendment just brings us in line with the Senate language.
Thank you for that. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Grossel, it sounds like you also have an A2 amendment. Would you like to move me to move that at this time, too?
I suppose if that's all right.
Sure, and I'll move that the A2 amendment be ahead of us. Would you please tell us about the A2 amendment?
Well, I don't know as much about it as the author, but so since she's not here, I'll do my best. It is an appropriation to give some monies to trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities to create a new water operating training program. The new wastewater operating training program is offered at Riverland Community College. And this was something that was talked to with Chair Hassan beforehand. And to keep this bill moving, she asked if we could attach it to this.
Thank you for the explanation. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Great. And the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative, I can vote to you, right. Representative Grossel, please proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And the bill before you today deals with the recovery from struggles with the Northwest Angle businesses that they faced back during the COVID years when we had all the shutdowns. We had some federal relief money that came through for grants to the small businesses, specifically for the ones on the Northwest Angle that experienced a 30% downfall during the shutdown. What happened was due to the Canada's closed borders. The Northwest Angle is pretty much isolated up there. If they don't have, the only land access is across a portion of Manitoba. And the only other access is across the water, which during the wintertime, you run across ice. So the business owners struggled up there to stay in business and are still recovering because of the border not entirely being completely open. So it made it, it continued to make it difficult, and with last year's high waters, didn't help them at all as well. So with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers to provide you with more details.
Thank you, Representative Grossel. And we have two testifiers, it sounds like. So whoever would like to go first, please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, your affiliation with an organization, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Grady Harn of Larkin Hoffman, representing Lake of the Woods County. And today, on behalf of Commissioner Ed Arneson, I'll read a letter that he submitted to the committee. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for considering our bill to help small businesses in the northwest angle who suffered extreme setbacks due to the pandemic. It has been my privilege for the last 23 years to represent Lake of the Woods County. The northwest angle is the most northern county in Minnesota and the most northern part of the contiguous United States. The unique geography of the northwest angle has unique challenges. The northwest angle is surrounded by three sides of Canada into the south Lake of the Woods with over 30 miles of open water. The northwest angle dealt with COVID-related borders closures for one full year. When closures eased, visitors faced very restrictive vaccination mandates at the border, making it difficult to access the area. The northwest angle is really 100% dependent on tourism. So we are asking for an extension to the remote recreational business forgivable loan program today. Lake of the Woods County received $5 million 2 years ago. $2.1 million was returned to the general fund, so we seek the remaining $2.1 million to help approximately 30 businesses suffering from the pandemic. On behalf of the Northwest Angle and our small businesses struggling to survive, I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Harn. And our next testifier is Joe Henry, is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you like, your affiliation with your organization, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Henry. I'm the Executive Director of Tourism for Lake of the Woods. You know, the Northwest Angle, it's that little tip of Minnesota that sticks up into Canada. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world, yet one of the most difficult to get to. So as you can imagine, as an area that depends upon pretty much 100% on tourism, when the Canadian border was shut down, and the fact is the majority of tourists travel 40 miles through Canada in order to reach their destination at the northwest angle of the United States, that shut off tourism. So it was shut down for you know, a little over a year. And then in addition, when Canada finally opened, there was many, many restrictions. You had to be vaccinated, number one. And it doesn't sound like much because, you know, we all know the percentages of people that have been vaccinated. But if you have a group of six people and one person of the group is not vaccinated, the whole group doesn't go. They don't want to leave, you know, one of their members behind. In addition, you had to use the ArriveCan app that Canada created. Now, a lot of people aren't real good with smartphones and things like that. In addition, the ArriveCan app was very clunky, meaning, you know, in the app, you had to put your final destination. And really, your final destination should be Angle Inlet, Minnesota. There wasn't an opportunity to put a U.S. destination. You could only put Canada. So we had to teach people to lie. And just, you know, naturally, a lot of people didn't feel comfortable with that. It's the instruction we got from CBSA, Canada Border Services Agency. You know, in addition, you had to have a molecular COVID test that showed a negative result that was less than 72 hours old. You know, a molecular COVID test was difficult to get. They were expensive. In many cases, they cost over $200. And if you went to the Northwest Angle of vacations for more than 72 hours, there was no testing facilities up at the Northwest Angle to give you another COVID test so you could travel back home through Canada. So because of that, basically the Northwest Angle was shut down for more than 2 years. You know, the first round of COVID relief through the Remote Recreation Business Act, you know, it was a savior. But, you know, through using retirement and you know, kids' college funds and everything else, the businesses up there are hanging on by the skin of their teeth still. So this second round, you know, initially it was a $5 million forgivable loan program. Through the criteria, $2.9 million was used up. There's $2.9 that got sent back to the general fund. You know, what we're asking is that remaining $2.1 million could be used for year two.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being here. Members, any discussion? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the group coming back, and The legislature made a program available to them, and the pandemic lasted a little bit longer than anybody kind of had figured out. And so we've seen a couple areas in northern Minnesota. The other part right by Lake Superior, I can't remember, Representative Kozlowski, it was one of your bills. Help me out here, but, you know, similar situation where a lot of dependent tourism traffic from Canada. And so I would support this bill. And Representative Grossel, you've done a great job advocating for this part of your district. And so they should be proud. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Any other questions? Representative Igo.
Just want to add a comment as well, representing northern Minnesota alongside Representative Grossel. This is a wonderful piece of legislation to continue to support the folks up there in the angle. Been up there multiple times. Can't wait to get back again, and appreciate all the good work you guys do up there, providing for sportsmen and women across the country to come visit. Great walleye fishing, but I don't know. The Grand Rapids area might have a little better sometimes.
Oh, thanks, we have some competition this morning. Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. And Representative Grossel and to your testifiers, this is obviously really important. We've heard the dire situation on the border, and many businesses have only rebounded at, you know, 30%, in some cases even lower. And, yeah, as was mentioned, I was just looking through and the similarities of and differences of the Boundary Waters bill that's looking to assist anybody who kind of shares geography in the county, and especially some of those tribal nations. And looks like your bill would actually allow for a larger dollar amount. And so I'm just curious in terms of if you see interplay between the other designation that would serve anybody who shares the border as well as with this, and if there's any interplay or conversations we may want to have to make sure that they don't compete or folks can tap into and utilize the dollars that are desperately needed.
Thank you for that
Representative
question.
Representative
Grossel,
thank
go you, ahead. Madam Chair. And this bill is, these funds were designed specifically for the businesses who are isolated on the northwest angle. Mm-hmm. So they do not compete with any of the other funds or resources that may be available for border towns. This is specifically and only for that area up there. And there's approximately, 30 businesses up there that need those resources.
Representative Kozlowski, any follow-up?
Thank you, Chair Hansen. No, that's very helpful. And I think my question would just be in terms of curious what you're seeing in terms of rebound and percentages of folks being able to, with the dollars that were designated, how many businesses or what kind of impact do you think that these will have? I think it's really important, and I thank you for bringing this forward.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Yeah, please proceed if you have
thank
a comment.
You.
Yeah,
I sure do. Thank you for that question. You know, I did some phone calling this last week, and I called a number of resorts up in the Angle Inlet area, and the vast majority, 95%+ of their traffic comes from people driving to their destination, which means they have to travel through Canada. So consequently, of the businesses I reached out to, you know, we did year one, and year one was March 15th of 2020 to March 15th of 2022, compared to March 15th of 2019 to 2020 being a normal year. And if you're down more than 30%, then you would qualify. Well, now we take year two. And the question was, now, are they going to be down on year two also? And of the businesses that I, you know, surveyed, they're down anywhere from 47 to 87% year two versus a normal year. So they are still totally feeling because of all the restrictions that I mentioned. How are they doing now? You know, this would be outside the parameters of these dates, but this last ice fishing season was pretty good. The Canadian border currently has gotten back to what they would call normal. You don't have to be vaccinated. You don't have to use the Arrive Can app anymore. It's optional. And really, the restrictions have been lifted, so that's helping. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment, and thank you for being here. Any further committee conversation or discussion? Do you have another one?
I think we got the rundown of the next week's schedule.
We're not quite there yet, Representative Kosnick, but I do appreciate the foreshadowing. We're getting there.
We were talking about fish and I got a little excited.
See? It's a Friday. Friday and a few hours of sleep here in the legislature, and we get a little squirrely. So I appreciate you being here. Representative Grossel, any closing comments on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for taking the time to let us present this today. Just to refresh memories, we had the 2.1 in agreement between the House and the Senate last session, but with things not getting completed, that money did not get dispersed to these businesses once again. And everybody knows about the flooding and the high waters, et cetera, that just plagued that northern region up there. They were no different. There were so many of the businesses that could not function because most of their cabins, you couldn't get to them. So this will be a very good boost to help them to recover, continue to recover, and to get back on their feet and just help them to maintain until things start to level out for them. So again, thank you for your time and allowing us to present this today.
Thank you, Representative Grossel. Thank you to our testifiers. I know that this, you know, I'm a Minnesotan through and through, and so protecting some of the most pristine areas of our state, especially after facing this adversity, is really important. So thank you again for being here. And with that, I will lay over House File 2826 as amended to be for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members, we're going to do our minutes now. Can I please have a motion to approve the minutes from March 22nd, 2023?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith moves to approve the minutes from March 22nd, 2023. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Thank you for that. Next up, I will present House File 1163 on behalf of Chair Hassan. We have one testifier in the audience here. So I will just have you explain the bill for us here. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. If you'd like to just tell us a little bit about the bill, I will cede my time to the testifier. Okay. So if you could please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, your affiliation with an organization, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
We'll do. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rico Alexander. I'm the Executive Director for Parents and Community Action. We're a private nonprofit organization that operates the Head Start and Early Head Start program for low-income children and their families. In terms of the bill, I have what you probably have before you. That the commission will award grants in an amount to not to exceed $3 million. This is up from 1.5 from the last year's bill. I just want to thank you for this opportunity this morning. I'm here to support this bill, obviously, to raise the funding cap of capital improvement projects to $3 million. My organization was a recent recipient of $1.5 million from the Targeted Community Project Grant from DEED, and we're extremely grateful for the support, which will contribute to our Early Childhood Training Center and Workforce Development Facility in South Minneapolis that will enable us to provide training and on-hand work experience for more low-income community residents, leading to self-sufficiency, economic self-sufficiency. So we are a nonprofit, a small nonprofit, and as you know, I can speak on behalf of other small nonprofits when I say it is extremely difficult to garner funds for capital improvement projects. Many philanthropic foundations are in the business of funding people-centered programs, which is a good thing, but most don't entertain capital requests. Banks loans are equally as difficult to obtain, leading us to rely on government contracts that really don't provide the needed support, financial support for these larger capital projects. The funding that we were able to obtain through the governor's support is typically not enough, you know. And as most nonprofits struggle mightily to raise the necessary funds, we have a potential capital project on the table that is fairly large, but is critical that more funding be made available for well-respected, fiscally responsible nonprofits like ours that are seeking capital improvement funding. Lessening the existing administrative burden by increasing the funding cap for such projects will afford local nonprofits such as ours the needed dollars and the flexibility to take meaningful capital improvement projects that would help us make more persons, serve more persons in need of services such as ours. So with that, Madam Chair and committee members, I just want to reiterate, I do support the bill to increase funding for this project.
Thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for presenting your support for funding for the Targeted Community Capital Grant Program. Sorry that it's a little bit different than how we would normally present a bill, but your support is greatly appreciated. Members, any discussion or questions? Who wants to go first?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess we don't have House Research here. When was the 1.5, to anybody that could answer, I know Deed's in there, but generally not happy to, or I shouldn't say that. I don't know if you want to testify or help us, but I'm wondering when the $1.5 million was established in this program, and then now we're asking to move it to a $3 million per grant. Do we know
Thank
that?
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Do we have Deed in the audience who would like to take a chance at answering this?
I hate to put him on the.
It's Friday, Representative Kosnick, and we're all Friday, doing things a little different anyway. Yep. So let's try this out. Let's see how it goes. Thank you, and welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself, state your organization for the record, and proceed.
That's Representative Schumacher.
Time is everything.
Yeah, I was talking.
Oh, okay. Yes. You said welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Devin Bowdry. I'm legislative liaison at Deed. This program, I think the $1.5 million was in the original. It was in the tax bill 2 years ago, I want to say. And that was the first time we had the program or it was created.
Thank you for that answer. Representative Kosnick, any follow-up?
I appreciate that, yeah. So my thinking is that this program hasn't been established for an extreme amount of time, just a couple short bienniums. And so I recognize where doubling the grant size may help certain projects, but balancing that with my understanding is there was 149 proposals and previously over $173 million worth of grant requests. But with limited resources, only 11% of the requests were granted. So by increasing the size of the grant, it's going to have the grants be larger, but we're not going to be able to help as many people, and we're already only helping about a little over 10% of the people or the requests that are submitted. So I know we got a big money tree somewhere, and we have an open appropriation on here. So do we have any idea of the appropriation for this grant program? And, right now it's blank on line 1.14. And so I'm kind of looking for some guidance on how much money are we looking to spend on this program, and then doubling the grant size is a little bit of a concern.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. And I'll just add a little bit more information to the...
It's hard because I know you're not the author.
That's okay. We can do this. It's all right.
If you can help us, that would be
great.
Sure.
So we do know, to your point, that Deed had announced last year that there were 16 winners of the grant funding out of 149 applications. So we obviously know there is a need there. So that's reassuring. These were projects located all over the state, half in the metro, including some other organizations that we have heard from before, which was for the $1.5 million. I do know that there's a blank appropriation here. I know what the budget targets as they are. I think this is going to be a matter of what's available and what else is there. That's what I would add to this conversation. We can certainly follow up with the committee should there be more conversation about that. I'd also wanted to just comment that, yes, this was brought forward in the tax bill in 2021, so it is a relatively new program, so I just wanted to confirm that as well. And at that time, that bill in 2021 appropriated $24 million for those grants and gave priority to groups and projects that had not traditionally received state capital project money. So a little bit more history on that. I'm sorry for not using that up front and saying that in the beginning. again, just taking this bill over. So I think we have a follow-up question to come about the open appropriation when we get to the omnibus bill and what amount actually goes there. I hope that's an answer for you, Representative Kosnick. Any follow-up?
That's thank you, Madam Chair. That's very helpful, because when I recognize that there's almost $174 million in request compared to what was previously appropriated, mm-hmm. it's a huge difference.
Yes.
Now we're increasing the size of the grant request. Mm-hmm. So I think we're only serving 16 grants. Probably it'd be ideal to try to serve more people, but that's helpful information. Still some concerns. The bill was, looks like, I wish there would have been an amendment to kind of put a dollar amount in there for us, mm-hmm. so that we can be better informed of the intentions. It's not a brand new bill. It was revised starting in January 23rd, introduced in February. So there has been time to put a dollar amount in there, but your information is very helpful. I'm going to presume, maybe inaccurately, a similar amount of 24 to slightly higher million dollars in the blank appropriation is what I'm going to guess. But my concern would be is that we're doubling the size of the grants, but we're not helping that many people for the number of people that, 11% actually received the award, only 16 grants out. So I'm not sure how we're going to increase the amount of the grants, increase the amount of the appropriation, but we're not going to help that many more people, is kind of my concern. But I know it's kind of fluid right now as we put the omnibus bill together. So your information that you shared with us is quite helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. I'll take your over-under on the bet on how much this ends up in the appropriation here. So any other discussion from the committee? Representative Igo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I speak to, I guess I should kind of say I have three organizations in my district that benefit from these grants. So I guess you could say the House District 7A was a little spoiled on this one. But it's good because these groups, I just want to mention them. Access North builds ramps for seniors across northeastern Minnesota, helps them keep them in our homes. The IEDC, Itasca Economic Development Corp, they do a lot of work to attract economic development to Itasca County. That was a huge grant for them to receive. I also want to mention Kootaska Community Action, what helps our communities across Itasca County, Coochin County, St. Louis County. So they're a great organization as well. So Representative Kosnick's point, I did, just reading over the dollar amounts, I'm making an observation. If we increase that dollar amount to 1.5 to 3 million, I would worry about the disparity that if we're unable to, if we're only going to be able to put another $16 million in this pot, if we increase to $3 million, we look at some of the projects that were funded at the $1.5 million max. A lot of them were in the metropolitan area, which is fine because I understand that's where more people live, but I would hate to see more dollars. If we're only able to put, let's say, $10 million in and, 70 to 80% of that gets eaten up by a $3 million increase down here in the metropolitan area, Greater Minnesota is going to lose on it. And yes, when you look at these Greater Minnesota dollar amounts, a lot of them are smaller, but those dollars go a lot farther, and they help a lot more people. So that is my only concern. I will agree with Representative Kosnick as well, saying that if we had a dollar amount here today, I think it would be a little bit easier to have the conversation about whether this was going to work or it wouldn't. But I will say I share the same concerns and just wanted to point that out. But I do thank the testifier for being here today, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Igo. If you have a suggestion for a number, Representative Kosnick made a 24 estimate. So 24 to 30. Okay, we're just taking notes here. Representative Igo, do you have any numbers you want to estimate?
Higher,
lower, above, below? Take the under. All right, he's going with the 24. All right, any other discussion? Any other discussion to this bill? Seeing none, I will go ahead and lay over House File 1163 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill with that blank appropriation filled in and a follow-up to Representative Kosnick and I go to see who was closest on that one. And then any questions about our schedule for next week?
I think we covered it the last meeting, whenever that
Friday
was.
Friday was
added? Correct. So we will be meeting next Friday. Wednesday and Friday of next week, so please look at our committee schedule posted online. Any other discussion about upcoming schedules or plans? Seeing none, our business is completed, and I hope you all have a fabulous weekend and get some rest, and the meeting is adjourned.